All right, good morning. I want to thank all of you for being here today. My name is Shirley Pate, and I am with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I will be the moderator today for the press conference. After our speakers have made their presentations, we are going to allow perhaps 20 to 30 minutes for a question and answer session. And then after that, if speakers are able to stay a bit longer, then members of the press can certainly interview them at that time. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has joined a variety of other groups which are represented here today in order to form a coalition. The name of our new group is called the DC Metro Free the Cuban Five Committee. For over 40 years, Miami-based terrorist groups have planned and committed terrorist acts against Cuba, yet the United States has failed to investigate. Because of this refusal, Cuba made the necessary decision in order to send five Cuban men to the United States to monitor the activities of these terrorist groups based in Miami and to warn Cuba about imminent attacks. Cuba once again shared this information with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and once again the FBI refused to investigate. Not only did they refuse to investigate, they turned around and they arrested the Cuban Five, who were unjustly convicted at a later time of conspiracy to commit espionage. Between the five of them, they received four life terms and 75 years in jail. Today, September the 12th, is the ninth anniversary of the arrest of the Cuban Five. Beginning today and through October the 8th, our organization will be working with organizations throughout the world to free the Cuban Five. Here in DC, we have a particular list of activities, and we have them here with us, and we can provide them to you. I want to urge you, before we go to our speakers, I want to urge you to come to a very important event this evening regarding the Cuban Five. It's a panel discussion that features Leonard Wineglass, who is one of the attorneys for the Cuban Five. And the title of the panel presentation is Foreign Policy, Politics, and the Law, the Case of the Cuban Five. It begins at 6 p.m. this evening at the Howard University Law School, Moot Court, located at 2900 Van Ness Street Northwest. The UDC Van Ness Red Line Metro stop is closest. And we will also have flyers available on that particular event. All right, let's go on to our speakers. First, I'd like to present the coordinator of the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five, Gloria Larriva. Sisters and brothers, 9 years ago today, five Cuban men were arrested by the FBI in a brutal raid in Miami. They have been in prison since then, in the most severe prisons of the United States. If the U.S. government were to have their way, three of them would spend the rest of their lives in prison, and two would spend 15 to 19 years incarcerated. They never belonged one day behind bars. Gerardo Hernandez, Ramon Lavagnino, Antonio Guerrero, Fernando Gonzalez, and Rene Gonzalez were engaged in a mission that in any other country would be considered a great act of courage. For these men, now known as the Cuban Five, were involved full-time in stopping terrorism. We have come to know about the scourge of terrorism in the United States since 9/11. But Cuba has had the misfortune of experiencing terrorism for almost 50 years. the deaths of 3,400 of their citizens is what motivated the Cuban Five to dedicate their lives to protecting innocent, defenseless people, no matter what their nationality. This week in Washington, we are witness to the U.S. government's machinations to try to continue and justify a genocidal war and occupation in Iraq and Afghanistan. And in keeping with that war of terror, the Bush administration is determined to keep the Five sequestered in prison. The fact that the two most notorious terrorists in the Western Hemisphere, Luis Posada Carriles and Orlando Bosch, are living free and clear in Miami, despite their role in masterminding the 1976 bombing of a Cuban airliner, killing 73 people, despite the fact that Posada brags of his role as a CIA agent, he has been given carte blanche by the U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who has refused to declare Posada a terrorist. Therefore, these two facts, the imprisonment of five anti-terrorists and the freedom of two terrorists in Miami, is resounding proof that George W. Bush is actively promoting and supporting terrorism. Today marks the 9th anniversary of the Five's arrest, but most importantly, it marks a new phase in the struggle to free the Cuban Five. Around the world and across the United States, hundreds of organizations and thousands of individuals are building actions, holding demonstrations in front of U.S. embassies around the world, vigils, forums, protests, to demand an immediate stop to the persecution of the Five. On August 20th, the third oral argument hearing in the appeals of the Five was held in Atlanta, Georgia. The defense team made strong presentations of the men's innocence, of the government's misconduct, and the complete lack of evidence in the life convictions of the Five. We are hopeful of a positive outcome in the legal arena, but we also know that the Bush government will likely try to appeal any potential victory for the Five. We are here to give notice to the Justice Department. And to demand of the Bush administration, stop the persecution, stop supporting terrorism, no more impunity for terrorists, extradite Posada Carriles to Venezuela, and free the Cuban Five. Stop punishing the families and the wives, Adriana Perez and Olga Salanueva. Allow them to enter the United States to visit their husbands. After 9 years of wrongful imprisonment, the international and U.S. campaign is yielding positive results. We've seen a considerable amount of media coverage, and we call on the media to continue covering and increase the coverage, help shed the light on this injustice. The National Committee to Free the Cuban Five promises an escalation in our campaign to free our five brothers. All the efforts of their supporters and the inspiring example of Gerardo, Antonio, Ramon, Fernando, and René, who never succumbed to FBI pressure, never succumbed to U.S. government threats. This is what motivates us to keep fighting for their freedom. We know that they will be free like Nelson Mandela became free. Hold on, brothers. Freedom will be yours. Thank you. Just hold it. Okay, I'd like to introduce our next speaker. It's Luis Rumbo. He's the former District of Columbia Assistant Attorney General, presently the Communications Director of the Cuban American Alliance Education Fund.
Have to deal with a third mic. Do you hold it up? Have to hold up a third mic?
No.
Thank you.
Good morning. I hope I can make myself heard. In the spring of this year, we were here in front of the Department of Justice to speak to Alberto Gonzalez about the case of Luis Posada Carriles. The other side of the coin of the case we come to address today, the case of the Five. Posada Carriles is the undeniable terrorist the man whose record requires the Attorney General to classify him as a terrorist and to take consequent action under international treaties and the laws of the United States. Gonzalez has now resigned, but Posada Carriles still walks free in Miami, where he can meet his former accomplice, Orlando Bosch, another undeniable, unreconstructed terrorist. When we refer to Bosch as a terrorist, we are not calling him names or trying to insult him. The term was applied to him by this very Department of Justice when it recommended to the first President Bush that Bosch not be permitted to enter the U.S. That was long before 9/11, long before the term terrorist became so loosely applied that a Secretary of Education saw fit to call the National Education Association a terrorist organization. Orlando Bosch was waived into the U.S. over the objection of the Department of Justice by the first President Bush. Posada Carriles has been welcomed to the U.S. by the current President Bush. Between the two of them, like bookends marking off a compendium of related volumes, is a whole series of other terrorists, the kind who keep massive amounts of arms and munitions for their own private armies. Typically, they have been trained by the CIA in commando actions. On the other hand, the five Cubans in jail now for 9 years were not spies, did not pass on any information beyond what was available publicly, and were here precisely to keep track of terrorist activities hatched in or directed or funded from Miami. It's not that the Cubans attempted to keep their information secret from the U.S. government. They reported what they had learned to the Cuban government, and that government gave to the FBI, directly across the street from where we are, the very extensive information they had collected from various sources. This information in dozens of folders of documents detailed terrorist activities against Cuba that had been taking place, including a rash of bombings in hotels and tourist facilities in Havana, and that would continue to take place unless the U.S. government acted to prevent further attacks. But the U.S. did not act to rein in those terrorist activities. What it did do was to arrest, in 1998, five residents of the Miami area, three of them born in Cuba, and charged them with espionage. Or rather, it charged them in the media with espionage, creating a firestorm of unremitting and inescapable publicity in Miami. Because in court, it had to bring lesser charges for lack of evidence. It made clear that not only would the U.S. continue to shelter terrorists when their target was Cuba, it would also throw into jail anyone who attempted to warn the Cuban government of the terrorist plans being hatched against them, or anyone who attempted to warn the U.S. government of terrorist activities based in Miami. Posada and Bosch were to remain free as respected elders of the Batistiano circles of Miami. The five were to be scattered around the U.S., put in solitary, and imprisoned for periods for as long as two lifetimes. Their treatment was to be punitive and exemplary. It was noticed to Cuba of a continuation of a hostile policy of blockade without quarter. That blatant contradictions were raised by the two cases did not matter. In law school, I learned about criminal procedure and due process and constitutional principles. As an assistant attorney general in D.C. for almost 20 years, I saw how these procedures and principles were applied in practice, and learned also about the interface of politics and the law, and about how to maintain a separation between the two. I learned also about prosecutorial ethics, first as a naturalized citizen, and second as a member of the bar and officer of the court. I swore to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the United States, as do all attorneys, including government prosecutors. When I read about the case of the five, I was ashamed and angry, and upset as a government attorney at the plain lack of fairness and due process. I think any conscientious attorney who read the record carefully would feel the same, enough to act on those feelings, except that there are certain issues that become radioactive that are best not mentioned, not even looked into, at the risk of career opportunities and political credibility. The case of the five is like that. It has taken years for this case to come to public attention through the media. In the post 9/11 world, a world divided by the president to good and evil, those with us and those against us, patriots and terrorists, people with a sense of self-preservation can become curiously uncurious and silent. Anything labeled with the phrases Cuban spies or national security, as this case was from the beginning, starts to look like containers of pesticides or radioactive materials with their warning labels of skull and bones. Even more so in Miami. You all know about the rantings of certain English language radio talk show hosts, the kind who invite guests to the show only to tell them to shut up, the kind who are short on facts but long on fear-mongering and name-calling. Media personalities have become more famous the more they attack and the more ferociously. But they are innocents compared to the hosts of Miami talk radio. Miami TV is uniformly one note and hard line when it comes to Cuba issues. The leading Miami newspapers play the same tune. In Miami, questioning any part of the party line of the moment turns you into an enemy or suspected enemy. Deviating from the line can mean the loss of your job and social rejection. It places your children in the same situation, making them nervous about just mentioning their last names. A magazine, newspaper, or radio show that challenges the accepted line is likely to be hounded out of existence, its advertisers targeted and made to withdraw. Miami is a city with a long history that goes far beyond acts of repudiation to physical attacks, bombings, nighttime threats on the telephone, and so on. It is a city with a population trained over the years to accept that anything the local militants say about Cuba is right, and that any questioning of it is dangerous. That the federal government supports this state of affairs is made plain by the constant appearance of government officials and congressional and presidential candidates in Miami to pledge their support and raise votes and money. All of this, of course, affects jury members and even federal judges. What is more, the case of the five went to trial in the fall of 2000. Earlier that year, the Elian Gonzalez case had wholly absorbed Miami, leading to a conclusion with the return of Elian to Cuba that infuriated the anti-Castro residents. This is the atmosphere in which the trial of the five took place. It goes without saying that Miami, that place at that time, could not possibly have been a fair venue. The defense moved to change the venue. The motion was denied. As a result, we saw abnormalities, such as the jury finding the defendants guilty of charges that the prosecution had sought to withdraw for lack of evidence. Indeed, substantial evidence was neither needed nor presented. The mere fact that the state had brought charges against Cubans in Miami was sufficient to establish guilt. But beyond that, the conditions of imprisonment for the five and the punishment given them were out of proportion to anything in similar cases. This case was brought to placate anti-Cuban militants, themselves sponsors of terrorism, and to make plain to Cuba that its attempts to cooperate with U.S. authorities had been and would be ignored. Here are some of the salient legal facts in the case. After being arrested, the five were placed in solitary confinement for 17 months to await trial. They had not been armed, were not dangerous to anyone, and were disciplined and educated men. Solitary confinement was an attempt to disorient and break down the five, a lighter version of the treatment given to prisoners at the base in Guantanamo. The five were distributed around the country to different federal prisons, making it difficult for attorneys and families and supporters to communicate with them. The five were convicted not of spying, but of failing to register as foreign agents, of conspiracy to commit espionage, in the case of three of them, and in the case of Gerardo Gonzalez, also conspiracy to murder. The five conceded that they had not registered as foreign agents. They denied the other charges. The testimony of the trial established that none of the information gathered by the five was secret, nothing beyond what might be published in the newspapers. The prosecutor, addressing the jury at the beginning of trial, said, quote, "We arrested these five men and confiscated 20,000 documents from their computers. But ladies and gentlemen of the jury, none of these 20,000 documents contain a single page of classified information." The testimony of the trial established that the actions of the five had not put the security of the U.S. at risk in any way. The case against Antonio Guerrero was that he worked at a metal shop on a Navy training base, a base that was open to the public and with an observation area from which visitors could photograph the planes at the base. The government argued that the five had agreed to have Guerrero at the base, thereby conspiring to spy along with the visitors and tourists. The murder conspiracy charge against Guerrero was based on the false assertion that the Cuban government had learned of the flights to Cuba of a group called Brothers to the Rescue only through the five, and on the faulty conclusion that when the planes were shot down, it was through the collusion of Guerrero in a premeditated murder. The defense proffered testimony from the Clinton administration's point man on Cuba to the effect that the flights of Brothers to the Rescue were open knowledge, not secret information found by the five. His testimony was not permitted. The prosecutor eventually admitted that there was no evidence to back up the charge and moved to modify the charge, but the motion was refused. The jury then proceeded to convict on the unsupported charge. I can share some personal knowledge of this aspect of the case. The night before the planes were shot down, the Cuban National Folkloric Ensemble happened to be in Washington for a performance. There was an open reception for them at a club in Adams Morgan, and I attended. Many community people were there. The space was standing room only. Richard Nuncio, the Clinton point man whose testimony was disallowed at trial, was also there. A reporter friend covering the event came over to tell me that Nuncio had just announced there in the club that the planes would be flying the next day. My immediate reaction was to exclaim, "They must be stopped. They are going to be shot down." That was because the planes had been in the news for some time. They had been flying over Havana dropping anti-government leaflets. The Cuban government had made it clear that it would take action. The planes had continued to fly in open provocation. Anyone following the news, especially in Miami, would have known all of this. The U.S. government certainly knew this. It was no secret. By the way, just a few days ago, Fidel Castro wrote in one of his columns that the government, his government, had communicated directly with the Clinton government about the issue, and that he was given to understand that Clinton had ordered that the planes be kept from flying. Prosecutorial misconduct took place throughout the seven-month trial. Prosecutors, for example, argued legal points unsupported by any evidence. A picture of Fidel Castro, obviously of no probative value whatsoever as to the actions of the defendants, but guaranteed to be inflammatory and prejudicial, was projected on a screen in the courtroom. After 7 months of trial, the longest trial in U.S. history up to that date, the jury retired to consider 134 volumes of transcript and pretrial testimony, and more than 800 exhibits, some of them as long as 40 pages. With remarkable expediency, the jury returned a guilty verdict beyond a reasonable doubt within one day. The court followed up with sentences with the maximum prison terms allowed. Gerardo Hernandez, double life sentence. Antonio Guerrero, life sentence. Ramon Labañino, life sentence. Fernando Gonzalez, 19 years. René Gonzalez, 15 years. Sentencing guidelines prescribed in the case of conspiracy for espionage, a sentence of 26 years. The judge increased the sentences for the three defendants so charged to a life sentence. How does this compare to sentences given in cases of real espionage? In July of this year, Leandro Aragoncillo was sentenced in such a case. Aragoncillo admitted that he regularly transferred to his Philippine contacts national security documents classified as secret, and that the information could be used to the injury of the United States or to the advantage of a foreign nation. He also admitted traveling to the Philippines to meet his co-conspirators, including during a visit to the Malacañang Palace, the official residence of the President of the Philippines. Aragoncillo admitted that some of the classified information he removed from the office of the Vice President included information marked top secret that related to terrorist threats to the U.S. government interest. He was given 10 years in prison, 5 years less than the shortest sentence given to the five, to René Gonzalez. In 2004, Khaled Abdellatif Dumaisi was found guilty of conspiracy and acting as an unregistered agent of Iraq. In the end, he was given 46 months in prison, or less than 4 years. 11 years less than the sentence given to René Gonzalez. The appeals. In 2005, a three-judge appellate panel in Atlanta ruled concerning the five as follows. They appeal their conviction sentences and the denial of their motion for new trial, arguing that pervasive community prejudice against Fidel Castro and the Cuban government and other community events combined to create a situation where they were unable to obtain a fair and impartial trial. We agree and reverse their convictions and remand for a new trial. In 2006, however, after the direct intervention of Alberto Gonzalez, the full court overturned that hearing, that ruling. Ruling in effect that the five had received a fair trial. And let's keep in mind that in 2005, the same year that the appeal was filed, Luis Posada Carriles was arrested, and the various legal actions involving him were ongoing during the court's consideration of the appeal of the five. In summary, neither the arrest of the five, nor the proceedings and sentences affecting them, nor the conditions of their imprisonment have been fair and equitable. It's hard not to believe that the actions of the government and the courts in this case have been punitive and politically motivated. It is hard to avoid the conclusion that the conviction and sentencing of the five were part of a political show trial intended to protect terrorists such as Posada Carriles. The five remain in prison. Posada Carriles is now free in Miami. It is time to right this injustice. Posada Carriles must be extradited to Venezuela. The five must be set free.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
It goes under the right, make sure it's up.
Okay. All right, our next speaker is going to be Sonia Umansor, who is a representative of the FMLN. Sonia?
¿Esto dónde? ¿Puedo?
Ok, buenos días. Gracias, muchas gracias por estar aquí este día. Para nosotros es muy importante este día. Mi nombre es Sonia Umansor, represento al FMLN al Frente Farabundo Martí para la Liberación Nacional de El Salvador, un partido que está luchando muy fuerte para alcanzar cambios en mi país, El Salvador. Estoy aquí para representar al partido y también al pueblo salvadoreño en solidaridad con los 5 cubanos presos en los Estados Unidos. Y quiero dar un mensaje muy claro y muy enérgico al gobierno de los Estados Unidos. Este gobierno, esta administración debe ser más cuidadosa y debe darse cuenta que el mundo entero le está observando todas las equivocaciones, las políticas de imposición, las guerras, las invasiones, todo este acto injusto que está en contra de Cuba, todo el embargo que hay en contra de Cuba, injustificado. Tenemos este día 12 de septiembre los 9 largos años de encarcelamiento injusto con estos 5 cubanos que lo único que trataron de hacer es evitar actos terroristas como el que sucedió ayer en este mismo país. ¿Cómo es posible que este gobierno no esté tomando eso en consideración? ¿Cómo es posible que están hablando de ese dolor, de ese flagelo del terrorismo? Lo único que hicieron estos 5 cubanos es tratar de evitar esos actos como el de ayer, el acto terrorista que sucedió el 11 de septiembre. También quiero decir al pueblo norteamericano que estamos seguros que ese pueblo generoso que ama también la verdadera democracia y la justicia, un día cuando se den cuenta, cuando tomen conciencia de qué es lo que sucede con los 5, ellos mismos van a venir a liberar a estos 5 héroes cubanos. Entonces yo quiero decir que es solamente cuestión de tiempo. Estos 5 héroes cubanos, grandes padres, hijos, hermanos, van a ser liberados. Les quiero decir a ellos, porque estoy segura que ellos están en la cárcel, como lo han dicho, con mucho orgullo, llevando un uniforme de la cárcel, porque ellos saben que lo que hicieron no es un delito. Ellos saben que más tarde o más temprano van a ser liberados. Entonces, decirles a ellos que su libertad está muy cercana, más cerca de lo que nosotros creemos, porque este país está tomando conciencia cada vez más. Los países del mundo este día están inaugurando cada vez más comités, y este día hemos inaugurado en Washington D.C. este comité que va a luchar incansablemente hasta alcanzar la libertad de estos 5 cubanos que están presos aquí mismo en los Estados Unidos. Al pueblo cubano decirle que le admiramos, que le respetamos, que le amamos por todo ese heroísmo, por toda esa dedicación, por toda esa dignidad que los ha mantenido, que los ha mantenido en pie, y que sabemos que van a seguir luchando y que van a seguir defendiendo su derecho de vivir como ellos determinan que tienen que vivir. La autodeterminación de Cuba es muy importante para toda Latinoamérica, y yo estoy segura que ese pueblo va a seguir defendiéndolo. Entonces yo quisiera decir que este día es muy importante para nosotros. Este día es un día de acción nacional, y no solamente en los Estados Unidos, sino en el mundo entero ya se sabe de estos compañeros presos injustamente, y esperamos que pronto van a ser liberados. Estamos aquí con la plena convicción de que pronto van a ser liberados. Muchas gracias.
All right, our next speaker is Wayne Smith, who is the former chief of the U.S. Intersection in Havana and presently the senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. Wayne?
Good morning. What I care most about is the honor of our country. I was in the diplomatic corps for 25 years. Before that, I was 4 years in the Marine Corps and fought in the Korean War. This whole episode with the Cuban Five is a disgrace to our country. It's a disgrace to our honor. It's a disgrace to our system of justice. Absolutely. There was no evidence to convict these five men. They got them on conspiracy to commit espionage. What does that mean? Conspiracy. They agreed among themselves that they were going to do it, but there's no evidence that they did. And in the case of Gerardo, murder. How murder? The planes were shot down. Yes. The brothers to the rescue planes were shot down. But Gerardo had nothing to do with that. They were shot down by the Cuban Air Force. He was not in contact with the Cuban Air Force. He was not able to pass any information to them. And everyone knew the planes were going to fly, as we've heard. So it is a sham, an entire sham, a disgrace. It must be overturned. This cannot be allowed to stand. I think you've heard quite enough to know that it is a sham. There's no evidence. This is simply a trumped-up charge. I have some experience with this since I was sued by the Cuban American National Foundation some years back. That also was an entirely trumped-up charge, but I had to stand a jury trial in Miami. So, of course, I was convicted. But, fortunately, I won a unanimous decision in the appeals court and did not have to serve any jail time. Just let me say for the Spanish-American channels here, es una desgracia. Este episodio con los cinco es una desgracia, deshonra el sistema de justicia de nuestro país. Yo hablo como ex diplomático, como ex soldado de la infantería de la Marina, y digo, es una desgracia y debemos cambiarlo, debemos cambiarlo. Muchas gracias. I get up here. There we go. Here we go.
Okay, our next speaker will be one of our coalition members, Bamboshi Shango, who is a representative of the Venezuela Solidarity Network.
We want to thank you on behalf of the Venezuelan Solidarity Network for allowing us to make a humble contribution and to make a couple of notes to this proper procedures going on here. One, we want to say that Venezuela is, of course, very interested in this case. The Bolivarian government of Venezuela sees this case as part and parcel of their case to have Carella deported to Venezuela for trial. It's very important for Venezuela because what happened here is like a twisting, a turning upside down of reality. You have five men who are innocent, who are in jail, and you have a terrorist who is guilty walking the streets in Miami. We want to say that for us, there are several points that need to be made about the five. One, this case is part and parcel of the larger political prisoners case in the United States, and it cannot be separated. Cuban Five are political prisoners. Two, for black people especially, we hold the Cuban Five a debt of gratitude. Three of the five fought in Angola, defeating South Africa once and for all and bringing down the apartheid regime. We also want to say that for us, this case is a whistleblower case. The Cuban Five found evidence and gave it to the authorities. The authorities did what they do in most whistleblower cases. They take out the whistleblower. We want to say again that on behalf of the Venezuelan Solidarity Network, we believe the Cuban Five should be free. We believe the Cuban Five should be free because they're innocent. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Our next speaker is going to be yet another coalition member. This is Nepha Freeman, who is a representative from No War on Cuba. Nepha?
One of the dictionary definitions of war is a state of open and declared armed fighting between states or nations. This is just one dictionary definition, but those that are more applicable to why we are here are the art or science of warfare, or a state of hostility, conflict, or antagonism. On behalf of the No War on Cuba movement, we thank the newly formed DC Metro Free the Five Committee for organizing this press conference and allowing us the opportunity to speak this afternoon. It is the contention of the No War on Cuba movement that for the last 46 years, the U.S. government has waged a multifaceted and protracted war against the people of Cuba. It's multifaceted because it has included outright invasion, all forms of economic sabotage, a propaganda campaign of half-truths, misinformation, and outright lies, manufacturing an opposition of mercenaries within Cuba, or shall we say, dissidents for hire, chemical warfare, and last but not least, is committing acts of terrorism through right-wing extremists who primarily operate from Miami. The Cuban Five represent a concrete, legitimate, and heroic effort on the part of Cuba to prevent this aspect of the war against their country by the U.S. government, the aspect of terrorism. The existence of hundreds of groups throughout the U.S. like the No War on Cuba movement, including many in the D.C. area and represented here today, all represent efforts of citizens of this country to strive in a common cause to prevent war on Cuba and to work for peace and a respect between the peoples of these two countries. Our brothers, our heroes, Gerardo, Ramon, Antonio, Fernando, and Rene are in fact POWs, prisoners of war. They are prisoners to the side of this war that demonstrates the most obscene and hypocritical political principles on the world stage. The hypocrisy in imprisoning the Five while arranging for terrorists like Luis Posada Carriles and Orlando Bosch and others to roam free is consistent and typical of U.S. policies and practices. The U.S. condemns Cuba as undemocratic, while unlike in the U.S., Cuban elections are not monopolized by the world's rich corporate class. They include national referendums, process of mass debate and discussion, and enjoy the participation of over 90% of Cuban citizens. The U.S. claims Cuba imprisons her citizens merely for their political convictions, while freedom fighters like Mumia Abu-Jamal, Marshal Eddie Conway, Sundiata Okoli, Imam Jamim Alamin, Leonard Peltier, and most recently the San Francisco 8 represent only a fraction of the over 100 political prisoners being unjustly incarcerated across the U.S. While the U.S. claims to be a champion of human rights and civil rights, it continues to oppress and repress the indigenous people of this land and also helps to do so in other lands. The U.S. promotes itself to be the most economically powerful country in the world, while unlike Cuba, over 45 million of U.S. citizens have no access to affordable health care. It reserves its best education and elder care only for those who can afford privatized services, and maintains vast populations of homeless, unemployed, and underemployed citizens. It's common for the popular image of the U.S. to harbor a number of transparent absurdities. It's absurd for the U.S. to accuse other countries for seeking nuclear weapons while they themselves have nuclear weapons and are the only country in history to have attacked another country with them. It's absurd for the U.S. to expect countries to submit to interference in their domestic affairs and infringements on their sovereignties in ways in which the reverse is unthinkable. But absurdities, like the claims by Orlando Gutierrez of the Cuban Democratic Directorate, that the opposition against Cuba is nonviolent, is a nonviolent movement reflecting the principles of Gandhi and Martin Luther King, are insults to the public intelligence. As if we cannot look at the record of organizations like Alpha 66 and Brothers to the Rescue and see that the mission of our five heroes was noble, justified, and necessary. As long as the U.S. public remains ignorant or indifferent regarding justice for the Cuban Five, the powers that be will feel as though they can commit any crime against humanity with impunity, and they will persist. History teaches that there are times when it is criminal to sit mute and idle while the rights of the weak are trampled beneath the heel of the strong. At such times, the silent witness becomes an accomplice to oppression. Martin Luther King Jr. said that silence is the voice of complicity. So while we also stand up for the Cuban Five, because everyone's freedom is diminished when any one of us refuses to see, hear, or speak the truth. Today we're inspired that support for the Five is growing, and that fortunately not all silence signals surrender. There is also the silence of the rising tide, the silence of the scorching summer sun, and the quiet that comes before the storm. These quiet moments precede crashing waves, boundless infernos, and torrential rains. The Five represent the most courageous of freedom and justice-loving people around the world. As such, deserve the most awesome support from people around the world. We look forward to the newly DC Metro Free the Five Committee and becoming a formidable asset to the national community to free the Cuban Five. And if we have anything to say about it, we will settle for nothing less in this obvious struggle for human rights. Thank you. Oh, sorry.
Okay, we have another speaker who is caught in transit but expects to be here in about 5 minutes, but there's some other things we'd like to do in the interim. One of them is we would like to gather everyone up here for a group picture. All the coalition members, if you could please come up to the front here so we can all have a picture taken together.
Extra life, Osada. Free the Cuban Five. Saving human lives.
Get out of here! Free the Cuban flag! 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 Free the Cuban flag!
Free the Cuban flag!
So you all concluded the formal part of this?
I apologize for not being able to get me earlier. As I said the other day, it's such a constant day. And also I wanted to say that today is Reverend Peltier's birthday, one of the longest counties, not the longest, in this country. The song I would like to dedicate to five, all and I love the fucking jail. If you have no one, go there, bail. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold
We have another speaker. Oh,
okay.
Right in front of the Justice Department, right here. Thank you.
Okay, so if you could, I'll put him up. Yeah.
Banner up against her.
No, I think it's... All right, folks, I'd like to introduce to you, this is Reverend Whit Hutchinson from the Wesley Methodist Church.
Yeah.
Reverend Hutchinson.
Buenas tardes. Hello. Good afternoon. Sorry, I'm so late. Maybe traffic is one of the ways parking is one of the ways they can control us, right?
I don't think this is working.
No.
No.
I'm glad to be here this afternoon to add my voice to others out of concern for the Cuban Five who are whose rights have been abridged, who are being held, who were accused in a kind of kangaroo court. Certainly to bring them to trial in Miami, in a context in which could hardly be characterized as a jury of one's peers, is already of concern. And it's a cause for alarm. And certainly the years that these men have been held, separated from their families, it should be concerning to all of us. I came out this afternoon. You know, I'm a lover of Cuba and of the Cuban people. I deplore our government's actions against a society in which is trying to construct a path based on justice for the majority rather than privilege for the few. But the real reason I think to come out and raise one's voice relative to these political prisoners within the United States has more to do with what Martin Niemöller, a religious leader, said in the 1930s in the context of the rise of the Third Reich in Germany. His famous quotation said, "First they came for the communists, but I was not a communist, so I did not speak out. Then they came for the socialists and the trade unionists, but I was neither, so I did not speak out. Then they came for the Jews, but I was not a Jew, so I did not speak out. So when they came for me, a religious dissident, there was no one left to speak out at all." And I think one reason to speak up about the situation of the Cuban Five is frankly because any of us who dissent from the policies of the U.S. government could be the next. It could be us next who are accused of terrorism in a climate of fear and a heightened environment of really police state, national security state. I think we have to be concerned when people's rights and the Constitution is trampled. When the most basic kinds of rights that perhaps some of us took for granted, the right to a trial by jury of one's peers, right to habeas corpus, right to the most basic human rights recognized in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights are abridged. And so I'm sorry I didn't get here earlier, but I'm glad to add my voice to those others to raise concern and to dissent from the way in which an increasingly crypto-fascist government here in the United States deals with this sort of political agenda. The incarceration of the Cuban Five is a political act against the Cuban people and Cuban society, and it's one which we should reject on the basis of universal human rights. That's what I have to add today. I'm glad to be able to add my voice to others. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your coming. Thanks.